Great. I have unmuted myself. Great. Good morning, everyone. I don't know how you feel when you hear someone come and say, I've got good news. We can all feel in this year of 2020, the year that ironically the phrase 2020 means kind of clear vision, seeing things in correct perspective. But 2020 for many of us will be the year that we remember that was a hard year, the year of lock-in, the year where we missed out. And we've become, as we've stuck listening to the news, perhaps a touch skeptical at times, thinking, what's going to go wrong? Someone announces good news. Do we feel a note of cynicism? Do we accept it? Do we allow ourselves to believe it? We become used to the power of mixed messages. It's really easy also to hear something and misunderstand its meaning because we tend to hear in terms of our own hopes and want things in our time. I'm reminded when I was at school, we heard the very famous misquote, the infamous one, apparently reported to the military high command in the middle of the First World War. And the communication came back to the British high command, send 4 and 6p, we're going to a dance. Can you imagine being on the radio desk and receiving that? Send 4 and 6p? Have they gone crazy? Have they lost it? Have they seen too much evaporated milk in their coffee? What's the matter with them? Send 4 and 6p, we're going to a dance. And of course, in the chain of communication, the message had got lost. It wasn't send 4 and 6p, we're going to a dance. It was send reinforcements, we're going to advance. Much more vital and with much clearer need for backup. But hearing the right message in the right way, in the right time is really important. And we could feel very justified to feel very skeptical. Can you imagine being there that day when Jesus said those words from Isaiah 61? When he stood up and somehow, I think it was Capernaum, in that synagogue in Capernaum, the eyes of everyone was on Jesus. It wasn't just simply the magnetism of a person. Scripture says that Jesus actually was quite ordinary, nothing special to look at. But he carried something that was special. And when he spoke those words, suddenly they were electric. They were alive. They were him. Good news wasn't just a message given to Isaiah many hundreds of years ago. Good news, charged with the presence of the Holy Spirit, was real then, is real now. But dare you believe it? After 400 years of silence, and then John the Baptist coming, and then Jesus stands up and says these words, and everyone was looking at him. Well, that infamous message, it was important that done to the military high command, was vital. It's vital that we hear the right message. I think about the subject of infamous. I think it was Kenneth Williams who once retorted on that very subject of infamy. Infamy, infamy, they've all got it in for me. It's very easy to hear with every turning corner of news as it comes our way that we're just in for something even worse. Oh, it's going to get, whether it's Brexit, whether it's vaccinations, whether it's a lock-in, financial recovering, whatever happens, there seems to be something worse coming over the horizon. Can we trust good news? The Bible offers this picture of ultimate good news. The message that God humbled himself. I cannot get my mind around the concept that God Almighty would entrust himself to a teenage, at that time, until she was married, single mum, and come as a man born nowhere to serve us, to communicate to us on our terms, in our language. It's hard to believe in that kind of chosen humility. Messages of good news might be easy to misunderstand. They might not be written in our terms or on our preferred timing. We tend to hear things and want them to happen today. Like we all heard the good news that we're all going to get our fish back in 5 years' time after protracted negotiations, but we will get our fish back. However, you know, we tend to hear things in terms of our own hopes. Here's one thing that happened to me just the other day, and I've written it down because I found it helpful. I awoke, head alive with a thought running round it. Wildfire, in fact. Opening my eyes, I wondered what time it was. And through the gloom, I could just see it was 4 a.m. 4 a.m. with a phrase running round my head like one that, and it buzzed with energy and life far beyond 4 a.m. And so I pray. I must have fallen asleep again sometime later, because the next thing, my alarm wakes me and I remember it's time to get up early. I needed to drive 1.5 hours to a meeting. Envelope of warmth gone. Breakfasted and equipped to go, I drive. I do early mornings better than late nights, but with a day ahead crammed with information, I'm likely to be tired at the end. Still, here we go. It's amazing how fast an hour and a half can melt away with the miles behind you. On arrival, I'm welcomed by having a gun pointed at my head. 36.5, you're okay. Just sign here for our COVID contact sign up. Coffee and tea is at the back. Keep at a safe distance and do keep wearing that mask until you're seated. Oh, great to see you. For any of you who've ever been met by a gun at the door and your temperature read. Ahead, a day sat by myself, distance from others by over 2 meters. We don't need to wear masks that day because we're in a well-ventilated space, which of course means the door is left open and it's pretty bracing. Well, that'll keep me awake. So time to queue up for some coffee. Perhaps I might go caffeinated today and try and keep myself stimulated after the early wake up. I try to engage the brain for information download. Beside me and to my left, a friendly voice calls, "Hey, Andy!" I can hear the smile in that voice. And I turn to see a smiling man, a brother from another continent. Now he's pleased to see me. Who was he again? I think I begin to recall the man. He clearly knows me. I wonder why. Now, when I met him before, I can't remember. And my mind grapples and I recall a very different man and a very different occasion. The smiling, warm-faced man beams at me. He streams into relating how he and his family are doing. He's really alive. There's a warmth of fire inside him that's more than just occasional happiness. But the man that I remember was not like that. He was not like that at all. I found I could fight at God with my pain and my frustration and not lose him. I found Andy a safe place. He carried on conveying that he was so enjoying what he was doing. In fact, he was doing some translation work that sounded very far-reaching. His wife was doing well, very happy. His finances, well, he had seen some amazing provision. Yes, still challenges, but a new rest and peace. God will find his battles and provide, and he's sure of that. And suddenly, no, it wasn't the coffee. I was still in line, a connect. And this time with that 4 a.m. moment. You see, this man, a year ago, had opened his heart to me about his life. Pain and grief had poured from him as we stood side by side, looking into the hot flames of a fire one wet, windy autumnal night. He had lost a baby. He had lost financial supporters. He was in missions. He didn't know where he was going or what he was doing. In fact, right then, it looked like his family couldn't even afford a visa to stay here in the UK. We had prayed. The fire had burned, and there were no answers. He only knew grief and pain. And that was it. The phrase, the one I had prayed at 4 a.m., the one someone was using to get my attention. Oh boy, I could be slow. He provides for those who grieve in Zion. Beauty for ashes. Sometimes good news is really challenging. It can be hard to hear, hard to allow into our hearts. When we're facing pain, when we're going through stuff, all it seems is like there's a fire burning inside us and we're getting hurt every moment. This man's life is real and circumstances really tough at the time that he opened his heart to me. Can we be sure that God will provide for us? Does he care? Does he help us? Is this message of good news a joke? To help us today, I'm going to look at three things briefly in the next 4.5 hours. First, God calls. Secondly, God clarifies. And in the 5th hour, God characterizes. God calls, God clarifies, God characterizes. To understand God's call, we need to interview someone called Jeremiah, because in Jeremiah, we're going to find God's phone number. We all, of course, know what God's phone number is. It's Jeremiah 333. Jeremiah 33, verse 3. My son, David, was born at 3:33 exactly in the morning. And Jeremiah 33, verse 3 says, call to me and I will answer you and show you great and unsearchable things you do not know. Cracking verse. Brilliant. God's encouraging us to call to him and I'll answer you. But surely that's okay for Jeremiah. He's a prophet. God's called him. He's special. He's not me. Actually, the circumstances that those verses come to Jeremiah, if you have a moment, I really recommend to you reading the beginning verses of Jeremiah 33. He's doing really badly. He's struggling. He's banged up in a courtyard, and the city of Jerusalem is surrounded. All the walls and buildings that he knows and loves that are for him security and safety have been torn down to keep out an invading army. Life isn't easy. In fact, the Bible says, when you read those verses, the word of the Lord came to him a second time. What does that mean? He'd lost it. Have you lost it in this time? Have you lost the sense, your grasp on God? If you've lost your grasp on God, does that mean that he's lost his grasp on you? This is good news. This is good news. Because the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah a second time. And that word was, call to me. I'm going to show you, Jeremiah, things beyond your circumstances. The word unsearchable is to do with impenetrability. It's to do with a city under siege. God is saying to Jeremiah, beyond your time, beyond what you're going through right now, I will reveal to you good things. Jeremiah was known as the weeping prophet. He felt everything. He's a very real character. God calls us. In a beautiful book, The Silver Chair, written by C.S. Lewis, I think it's the 5th book in the Chronicles of Narnia series, Jill, who gets through into Narnia, meets Aslan, and finally Aslan tells her his name because she didn't know who the lion Aslan was. Aslan, she says, oh, we were calling to you. And Aslan corrects her. He says, no, you would not have called to me unless I first called you. Have you lost your grasp on God? Does that mean he's lost his grasp on you? Jesus said, I chose you. You didn't choose me. You didn't. I chose you. God chose you. It's not about whether you get it right or wrong, or how many times you shouted at the kids this year, whether you felt that no one cared, whether you felt that this was the end. This year has given us, for many of us, a deeper and more honest look into our own failure than we could have ever imagined. Andy, I found a safe place where I could fight with God. God calls. Secondly, and we're going to remain with Jeremiah, he clarifies, he makes things clear. God clarifies. Maybe you remember this story, maybe you don't. The story of Jeremiah being called to go to the potter's house. Now, we're tempted to think that because this is a biblical character, he's perfect. So we're tempted to think that the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah and he went down very obediently and in a brilliantly good mood and sat outside the potter's house, where immediately he understood what was happening as he watched the potter doing his potting thing, you know? I like to imagine that maybe Jeremiah was in a bad mood and had 12 things on his Google Calendar to do that day. And hearing from God was an interruption. This last year has been an interruption. God uses interruptions to get our attention. And he asks us, like he asked Jeremiah, are you watching what I am doing? You see, as Jeremiah, maybe he's thinking, oh, I don't want to be here. But he sits there and maybe he burns through his bad mood because he knows that he's in the right place. There's no choice anywhere. He can't move anywhere else. He loses his sense of peace. So he stays there and he watches this crazy potter guy getting the bits of stone out of the clay, working the clay, getting the air out of it, throwing it on the middle of the spinny thing and making sure it's centered right. Call. Have you lost your grasp of God? He's not lost his grasp of you. He centers you right in the fact that he has called you, he has loved you, he has forgiven you. It's good news. But he works to get the stones, the little things in our lives that once they're, you shape that clay. Because I think Jeremiah asked the potter, what are you doing? You see, God gets our attention and he clarifies and he speaks to Jeremiah, don't I have the right to take the lump of clay, to take my people and make of it what I wish? Doesn't God have the right through circumstance to shape us as he would wish? And as the potter used lots of water in the shaping process, so seeing the Father's tears, seeing his love, seeing his grace enables us to go with the changes and the pressure points that he puts in our lives to shape us, so that we might find that gratitude is not just simply a mental hack, but the kind of smell and fragrance that cheers up whole rooms and lives. Andy, I found a safe place to fight with God. I felt like I was David in that cave, hiding and safe. And thirdly, God characterizes. God calls, God clarifies, and God characterizes. What does characterizing? When you think about my son or any member of your family, you might think that they are a bit like you. They carry something of what you're like. But what if I've blown it? What if I've done something wrong? What if I failed God? What if I failed others? Maybe you feel like you're too old. God can't use me. God can't call me. God can't forgive me. I've fluffed it. I've blown it. You feel like you're too young. You feel like you're not someone else. I can't speak like that. I can't listen like that. I can't draw clever drawings like that. You feel like you lost your moment, passed up your opportunity. And for this, we need Moses and three balloons. We need Moses because he's a real person. He had all the opportunity, grew up, you know, with a great education, took things into his own hands, ended up murdering someone and running away. But had God called him? Did God clarify his calling? Did God characterize him? And it reminds me of three balloons, because one day baby balloon is sitting down with mummy and daddy balloon, and mummy and daddy balloon are explaining the important things of life, which pretty much, if you're round and balloony, pretty much goes down to this. You can do anything in life that you like, but don't mess with your own knot. Whatever you do, don't mess with your own knot. Don't mess with somebody else's knot. Well, that night, baby balloon comes to bed with mummy and daddy balloon, and there's really, he doesn't feel like he's quite warm enough. He's at the edge of the bed and there's not enough space, and he's lying awake for ages. It must have been at least 37 seconds. And so he decides, what can I do to make more room in my bed, in the bed? And he looks at dad, and dad's this huge balloon, you know, and he thinks, well, surely, you know, dad's occupying like 75% of this bed. Dad was just a bit smaller. So he goes up to his dad and he unties dad's balloon, his little knot, and he lets some air out, and dad shrinks. Dad doesn't wake up. Still not quite enough space. So he goes to his mum and sees that his mum's occupying quite a lot of the bed. And so he goes up, unties the knot, lets out a little bit of air, a bit more space, but not quite enough. So he can't go back to his parents. So he gets his own knot this time. Unties the knot, lets out a little bit of air, just perfect. Ties up the knot again, just perfect. Got enough space, falls to sleep. Well, a balloon family wake up the next day and something's not quite right. And mum and dad exchange a series of concerned looks and decide to sit baby balloon down. And the mummy has an honest word. Now, son, want you to know that what you've done is wrong. You've let your father down. You've let me down. But worst of all, you've let yourself down. Have you let yourself down this year? Have you let other people down this year? Have you lost your knot? Have you lost your vital connection with God? Moses felt like he'd run away. Actually, he was 40 years in the desert looking after sheep. And one day, and who knows if every day God had lit a fire and was waiting for Moses to notice. We don't know that. But we do know this, that one day Moses noticed. Now, that there was a burning bush. Now, bushes light all the time in hot deserts. They just ignite spontaneously and then they're gone. And just like our thoughts, just like our anger, just like our regrets, they ignite. But Moses noticed that this bush didn't just disappear. And he looked at it. He noticed. And he was drawn into it. And it was hot. And it was burning. And God began to speak to him that there was something burning in his heart. You see, God had called Moses to be a deliverer. And God had needed to clarify that it wasn't because of Moses' education, his haircut, his cool upbringing. It was because God would be with him that he could do what God had called him to do. An encounter with God changes you. I remember still to this day, sat around my kitchen table a couple of years after getting married, and I designed a leadership course for some of our young leaders that we had in Derby. And I'd put hours into this. I'd done all sorts of sections and arranged all sorts of speakers to come along, and I thought it was really cool. And we prayed together. And I can only say that for me at that moment, I just knew that God was there. And it was like it was saying to me, Andy, get your hands off. It's me that trains and releases leaders. It's not you. You can do all the cool stuff that you think, but it's me that does it. It's really me. And it was like fire. I couldn't mess with it. Where does God turn up most in your life? What has he most clearly underlined for you through this season of living in the desert? What's burned in your heart, but it's not just a consummatory thought, not something that just is consumed in the moment? Leadership, serving others, is not about us. Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it bears no fruit. Moses had to go through an experience of dying in order to come to life. There is much this year that has died. But I want to say to you that the resurrection body of Jesus could walk through walls. I want to say to you that what God does in reshaping his church like clay is his business. And if God uses a pandemic to help us realize that the church is not walls and a roof and somebody else doing things, but God with me, then that could be really powerful. My friend again, Andy, I found a safe place where I could fight with God. I felt like I was like David in that cave, hiding, safe. You know the one when Saul came in and David could have killed him. Have you been tempted this year to kill God? To say, you see, you don't care. You don't notice what's happening in the earth. But David didn't do what was easy. And he trusted that only God could make him king, not his own hand. Thank heaven. God provides for those who grieve in Zion. That was the 4 a.m. phrase that I woke up with going round my head thinking, what on earth does this mean? I was praying it for a dear couple I know in ministry who sacrificed over many years, and I was praying for them as they were facing difficult circumstances at that time. God, this is a couple who are in pain. They are grieving, but they are serving you. Everything isn't ideal for them. But God, you provide for those who grieve in Zion. God calls. God clarifies HBC. And God characterizes. He burns into us a sense that he is. No, not a sense. The reality that he is with us. He is not a manual, something you turn to occasionally, to tell you what to do when the instructions, hey guys, don't work. But he is Emmanuel. He is God with us. Through the tears, through the shaping, through the clarifying that he has called you.